This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, originating from Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Robin Dow producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. The 20th day of August 2024. We are now 77 days away from the election, and we'll talk about that and more. The Democratic Convention is ongoing in the city of Chicago, and with us to talk about the world at large is Andre Codrescu. He was Distinguished Professor of English at LSU from 1984 until 2009. That's 25 years. Winner of the Peabody Award for his film Rhodes Scholar and the Ovid Prize for Poetry. Andre's father was an ethnic Romanian engineer, and in 1965, he and his mother, a photographer and printer, were able to leave Romania after Israel paid $10,000 in U.S. dollars to the Romanian communist regime for each of them. And after some time in Italy, they moved to the U.S., settled in Detroit, where he became a regular at John Sinclair's Artist and Writers Workshop. A year later, he moved to New York, where he was part of the big literary scene in the Big Apple. On the Lower East Side, he met Allen Ginsberg, Ted Berrigan, Ann Waldman, and published his first poems in English. And, of course, the rest, as they say, is history. A prolific writer, a man who was a fixture on National Public Radio for many years on All Things Considered. He's now back in New York. After leaving LSU, he settled briefly in the middle of nowhere, Yellville, Arkansas, and went back to his roots in the United States, New York City. And that's where he is, the center of the universe, as Gus Weil called it. Good morning, Andre Codrescu.
Good morning, Jim. It's good to hear your voice.
Nice to talk with you. What do you make of the craziness going on in our world?
Well, it is speeding up. A few days ago, it was hot and it rained miserably. I was on the beach and got the sunburn. And then a few weeks ago, the politics of this country changed from the weather and the feelings of it very quickly. I think, inconceivable in the past. And here we are. You know, it's a completely different place. I would say that a few weeks ago, you know, I was feeling quite depressed by the division and passion that people put into their political opinions. And now I feel that we've somehow gotten through it, and the sun is shining again.
Again, 877-217-5757. The Democrats have united behind Kamala Harris, who is about to become the official nominee of the Democratic Party. She was, of course, a presence last night at the convention in Chicago, but the night went to Joe Biden, the president of the United States, who got a four-minute standing ovation before he said a word. And when he has a teleprompter, he's okay. And last night, he delivered a stirring speech. He does have a long history of public service that involves almost a half century in the United States Senate. Andre Codrescu, it is an amazing turn of events because Biden withdrew, as far as a candidate, on July 21st. And here we are, we're not even a month in. And look how the world has changed, which shows you we are in a cycle that you never know what's going to happen.
Well, everything is follows suit. I mean, the technology is taking gigantic leaps. You know, the artificial intelligence is a revolution in technology, you know, and politics barely keeps up with it. But it seemed to me that last night was a triumphant moment for, and you know, it was a moment of seriousness. You know, it doesn't seem that like we're very serious about our future and our ideas about politics until Joe Biden took the presidency, and then you know, he restored the a calm and the dignity to the job. And he didn't boast of it, you know. So I was happy to hear him last night speak with such conviction about things that he did, the legislation he passed, and, you know, this extraordinary sacrifice he made, which I don't think it's ever happened in American history that the president in office passed the torch to his vice president, a younger one. In fact, I was thinking of somebody asking Nixon at some point why he chose Spiro Agnew for the vice president. And Nixon, in his typical cynical black humor mode, said it's assassination insurance. That certainly wasn't the case with Biden, and it's certainly not the case with Kamala Harris.
Yeah, well, supposedly when Nixon chose Gerald Ford as Agnew's replacement as vice president, he pointed at the chair behind the desk in the Oval Office and said, "Can you imagine Jerry Ford sitting in this chair?" Well, sometimes unusual things happen in our world, and politics is part of that world, and right now we're focused on it. Andre, since he arrived in the United States in 1965, now over 50 years, he's lived in Detroit, San Francisco, New York, New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Baltimore. He taught at Johns Hopkins. You've lived in some exciting cities. Most of them are blue cities. In fact, I guess all of them are, except for maybe Elville, Arkansas. But how do you compare the experiences you've had?
Well, I did live in the Ozarks in Arkansas for 7 years, and so it is an important place, and that certainly was not blue. The only other Democrat in the county was my neighbor, Carl Jones, at the end of a dirt road. I walked to his house in the evening, and we sat on his porch and had some whiskey and occasionally changed or agreed on some on some points. He was a retired school teacher, and you know, but otherwise, you know, you couldn't find a Democrat or anyone that was not somehow that had voted for Trump or would vote for Trump anyway. So I kept away from politics, you know, and you know, I got along fine with my neighbors. We had no problems, unless, you know, somehow the disappointment in the wrong way.
And then you moved to Trump's hometown, where he is highly unpopular, and he's now been convicted in a court of several felonies, as we know, and he's also been found liable in a civil court of assaulting a woman in a department store. And we've had guests on the air from New York City who say that they rarely run into anybody who is a supporter of the former president. Now, that's not the case in Louisiana, where over 80% of the white voters have voted for him twice and will quite possibly vote for him a third time. How do you explain this chasm we have in our country as far as how the politics are so different in different regions of our great nation?
Well, in New York, we know who Trump is, and so there are good reasons for disliking him, because he's a con man, and he's been doing this in New York for quite some time, but the country didn't know him very well. As for his appeal in other places, you know, like Louisiana and so far, I think he appeals to people who are frustrated with all sorts of things, and they project their unhappiness on him. They think he's some kind of savior, which he's not. He's not a partisan of the people who think he's helping them. In fact, he cons them too. And so, you know, and then our news sources have become so rarefied. You know, almost the entire country watches Fox News outside of New York. And so Fox News is the propaganda organ for, you know, Trump's cronies and you know, his ascent to power. But I think if he is allowed to, the people who support him now will be very sorry if he makes it again, because, as he said very clearly, there will never be a president, an election again in our lifetime.
Well, this shapes up as a razor-tight election right now, unless something changes, and it appears that Harris is a stronger candidate than Donald John Trump, and the Las Vegas odds now have her at a 52% chance of winning the election. The Electoral College is different. Trump right now Ironically, despite the odds in Vegas, he leads very slightly, but slightly in most of the swing states. Now, in Pennsylvania is the key one, and he's up by 0.2%. And if that one flipped to Harris, she would win the election. So all eyes will be on Pennsylvania. Why do you think she chose this governor, Tim Walz of Minnesota, instead of Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania?
Well, a number of things. I mean, Walz is America's daddy. He's a coach. He's a family man. And, you know, he's very appealing to most regular folks, you know. Where Shapiro, you know, I think was a bit of anti-Semitism going on because of Gaza and Israel. And although he's an incredible speaker and a very competent governor, I think that there was some kind of political calculation having to do with his...
Let's take a pause, and we'll return with the remarkable Andre Kadrescu after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Andre Kadrescu is our guest for a bit longer, and then we'll hear from Katie Bernhardt, the former chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party. 877-217-5757 is your number in emails. Go to talk at talklouisiana.org. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you're on the air with Andre Kadrescu. Good morning, Phil.
Yes, sir. I think President Jimmy Carter pointed out that now we really live in an oligarchy, and basically with the unlimited money that's now in our politics, it's basically bribery.
All right. What about money in politics? Can you buy public servants these days, or is that overplayed, Andre Kadrescu?
Well, if Louisiana of today and Romania of yesterday are any examples, of course you could, and you still can, I'm sure, because the corporations are not people. I mean, that is an unbelievable law, and you know, the Supreme Court has definitely put their two cents in with the rich and the wealthy, and you know, there's little you can do about it now. But it is, of course, you can buy power and influence and in this country, and Donald Trump is all about money. There's very little else I can think of in terms of policy.
Mike in Lafayette. Mike, you're on with Andre Kadrescu. Good morning, sir.
Well, could you please compare the personalities of Ceausescu, who was the last Romanian dictator, and our good friend Donald Trump?
All right. It's always a risky thing to do, but you lived under the regime, didn't you?
Right. Well, Ceausescu was a professional dictator, and he'd been trained for the job, where Trump is fumbling his way into the job, although he knows more about being a dictator now after 4 years of misery and feeling his way around. So, but I think that his connections, he likes Orban of Hungary, he's an admirer of Putin and Xi in China, and his North Korean boyfriend. So yeah, he's learning. I think there's no comparison that Ceausescu already had a very serious secret police apparatus at his fingertips, and everyone was under surveillance. But you know, it is these days with the kind of surveillance we do have on everybody, it is easier to be a dictator if somehow weasels his way into the seat.
Well, you obviously don't like him, but there are people who are on the campus where you taught for 25 years who like him. How do you explain the devotion in some quarters to the former president? They like him for any number of reasons, but it is an interesting phenomenon. Not only Trump and his mercurial personality, but the people who support him, Andre.
Yeah, well, cults of personality are very interesting, psychological phenomena, because they, to like somebody, unquestioningly is some kind of hypnosis. You know, it's a trance. I don't think people who are so loyal to him actually get past, you know, his rather, you know, provocative image, if you like. I don't, you know, Ceausescu didn't have, I mean, he did have a cult personality that was kept together by fear. I mean, people were afraid to say anything. They were afraid to say anything negative about the government because a few words could get you sent to a camp. And, you know, that is how dictatorships harden, you know. So every dictator started with a cult of personality, and then it turned into fear, where you couldn't say anything, even if you wanted to. But, and they ended up disappointed, you know, indeed this. All the dictators find out eventually, as Ceausescu found out when he was executed.
Sam in St. Francisville. Sam, good morning. You're on with Andre.
Yeah, Jim, just wanted to thank Andre again. A long time ago, 2003, I had retired from civic life and political life in New Orleans, and my wife and I decided to go into the Peace Corps. We got assigned to Romania, and through a mutual friend, Andre sent me the book called A Hole in the Flag, which he wrote. Just wanted to thank him again. It was a terrific insight and made our stay there much, much more important.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sam,
well, thank you. And thank you much. Yeah, that book is out of print now. It really should have another day.
Well, happiness is a state of mind rather than a state of place, and you have lived here, there, and everywhere, from Yellville to New York City, and you've been happy and buoyant wherever you are, Andre Kudrescu, and I'm amazed that you have found joy in this country and a person who came here literally with nothing. Nothing.
Well, yeah, I don't, you know, I've never felt like a victim. You know, actually, I felt like I had a great opportunity to start over again, and, you know, in America, I could. You know, and I'm an immigrant, you know, and I was a political refugee, and I didn't have anything when I came here, but what I did have is hope. And, you know, I don't, you know, buy Trump's rhetoric that we're a failed country and things are terrible, and here are these immigrants coming over the borders to take our jobs. That's all nonsense, you know. We are still a place full of opportunities. I mean, people come here without money. They come here without anything. But if they have any talent and want to do something, they can.
Well, you're proof that immigration is actually, on the whole, a good thing. And obviously, we have to have some controls. But we are a country of immigrants, and it is our diversity that makes us who we are in the United States. And Andre, we're glad you're in our country. God bless you. Let's keep going, keep talking, and it's always a joy to speak with you, my friend.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's always pleasant to talk to you, and good to be in Louisiana again in some way.
Well, let's do it again soon. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you.
And we're joined now from Chicago, that toddle in town, by Katie Bernhardt, the former chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party. And for those of us who are around back in the day when John Cameron Swayze was doing Timex commercials, take a licking and keep on ticking. Well, Katie Bernhardt epitomizes that. She was run out as chair of the Democratic Party, but she is a loyal Democrat. She's not switching, she says, and she's in Chicago, not as a delegate, just as a Dem, supporting the new sheriff in town, Kamala Devi Harris, who may very well be the next president of the United States. What was your impression of day one, Katie Bernhardt?
Well, I just think it's a truly inspirational time. I think there's so much energy galvanized behind her and Walt. I think it's a great opportunity for America and to see us all get back on track.
And it is, I remarked with Andre Kudrescu, it's amazing that this all happened in the last 30 days. And the Democratic Party, which is often not united, has united behind Harris and has done so quickly. How did this coalesce?
Well, I think we have a lot of great leadership at the DNC. I think that obviously there was a tremendous amount of concern across the country, but folks all over came together. Our leadership came together and said, we have got to do what's right for our country. This is certainly not the time for chaos. We have a remarkable candidate right here in our vice president. And everyone really did what was needed to ensure that we had a strong and the very best opportunity to win this election, just because the stakes are so high. And I think that everyone had the best interest of America in mind in this. There was a lot of self and big egos that were all put aside, that we got to do what's right. And I love that. I think this holding has been truly inspirational. I'm optimistic. I think it's a exciting time, but it's also a serious time. People here have a tremendous amount of concern if things don't go our way and what that means for America going forward.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Katie Bernhardt, who has stayed the course. She remains a Democrat. She's in Chicago. This is day two of the convention. We'll talk more with her after this timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and Katie Bernhardt, vivacious person who didn't desert the Democratic Party, and they voted her out and didn't even... Well, I don't know. Did they really vote you out, Katie? I'm still not sure what happened. Tell me more.
Well, on that note, there was some procedural challenges, and we bypassed an election in that situation. But I think right now everyone's focused on the elections ahead. That's what I'm focused on. That's what certainly everyone in Chicago is focused on, is coming together. And I think that's what's important in Louisiana. That's what's important across the country right now. Everyone, as you can hear, I'm losing my voice. It has been a tremendous amount of excitement, but a lot of talk about the impact to the courts, what will happen in Congress, how our policies will be shaped going forward. I don't know what how catastrophic it could be if we see another Trump presidency as far as our court system is concerned. There's obviously a doomsday mentality there, based on the things that have already happened. But I think that seeing Kamala Harris make history, be the first female president, an African-American woman, who comes from an amazing background as a prosecutor, just brings some normalcy to our country that we're looking for. She represents what we all want, I think, for the best interests of our children. Her running mate is absolutely incredible and inspirational man, a teacher, a veteran, a former member of Congress, a governor. I think that is representative of the people. I like to oversimplify things sometimes, and I look at it, I'm like, we want to vote for folks like us, right? And I think in general, people connect and vote for people that they can relate to. And when I look at America, I'm like, do we relate to Donald Trump, or do we relate to the Walt Harris team?
All right. Well, the people, I'm sure, who love Trump would say exactly what you said. But that's why we have a choice. And some people look at things differently, as we know. We're going to go to as many callers as we can. So please be brief in your remarks to Katie Bernhardt, who served as chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party from 2020 to 2024. She is a lawyer, graduate of LSU's Law Center, and has a BA from the University of Louisiana Monroe, and has logged a lot of quality time living in the Acadiana area. Mike in Lafayette. Mike, good morning. You're on with Katie. Hi,
yeah,
Mike.
Hello. I was wondering if you might be able to compare the turnout that Obama had versus the turnout that we had in our last election.
All right. Well, the turnout last time was good for Biden. It was good for Trump. Trump got more votes than anybody in the history of the country last time, but Biden got 7 million more votes. And also, another little nugget, the state that gave Trump the most votes in 2020 was California, where he lost by a huge margin. But Katie, right now California is neglected, New York's neglected, Illinois is neglected, even Florida, Louisiana certainly. The campaign's going to come down to two or three states, and I've expressed concern. You're an articulate spokesperson for the Harris-Walz campaign, but in Louisiana, we're not going to get much action. Why do you think that we're not going to get much action? But if things are happening the way they did in 2020, we will get big turnout. People turned out in Louisiana, even though it was pretty well known that Donald Trump was going to win our state. But how do you view the overall election, with the Southeastern Conference largely being a no-go zone for Harris and Walz?
Well, I mean, I think there's some basic political strategy, and you need to go in your swing states and spend the most time there and ensure that you win those states so you can win the election. So I certainly hope that continues to be the mentality going forward for the campaign. I'm sure it will be. So I don't expect that we'll see a ton of presence in any of our what are considered red states in the South. That said, I think people realize how very important this election is, and I do expect that we'll have a good turnout. We have congressional races on the ballot. We have new congressional maps, which I certainly think will play a huge role. I think it's important to the policies that will be implemented under the next administration. So we should see, like every presidential year, a great turnout, and I expect that. I think the energy is similar to what we saw with Obama. I was, my father was a delegate in Denver for Obama's first election, and it was tremendous. And we're seeing something very similar here, but with the contrast of Donald Trump and knowing exactly what that means for America.
Paul in Denham Springs. Paul, you're on the air with Katie Bernhardt. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. Will you make the case to rural voters that a warmer climate increases storms and insurance rates?
All right. I don't know that that's going to be a major issue in the presidential campaign, but climate change, I think, is something that Paul's alluding to, which is for Louisiana perhaps the biggest issue of all. I would say it is the biggest long-term, maybe even short-term, Katie. Candidates right now, they're going to talk a lot about the economy and about immigration, and probably not as much as we would like, Paul and I and some of the others, our erudite listening audience, would like about the what's going on with the climate. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are that the Biden-Harris administration made it clear that it didn't matter what state you were from, whether it's a red state or a blue state or a swing state, that we were well taken care of. And I think that resiliency programs, dealing with the insurance crisis here, dealing with our storm crisis here as a result of global warming, is going to be a priority for the administration. That's certainly not a big talk up here, but just going from the Biden-Harris administration and the federal funding we received to deal with those problems, I fully expect that would continue under a Harris administration. And I think that the voters here need to continue to vocalize that issue. It is certainly one of the top issues in the state, and it's something that our legislature needs mm-hmm. to deal with. But I think we'll see support from an administrative standpoint out of a Harris administration.
She has switched her position on fracking. Was that a move of practicality, or do you think she had a philosophical epiphany on this?
I think a lot of these things are practicality, right? A lot of us can believe in a move to green energy, but as I told my children who were pushing me to get a Tesla, I said, I have four of you guys, and I can't fit four car seats, and I got to get you out of school. We can't go on a bike from where we live, right? and so there's a practical nature in our economy and our society running on fossil fuels and making a logical shift towards a greener future. And I think that was likely part of her thought in that.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Katie Bernhardt.
Ms. Bernhardt, I listen, unfortunately, to right-wing hate talk radio occasionally, and the lies, the misstatements, the falsehoods, that is the gospel of the Fox News channel and that other renegade channel, people believe it, and it's all propaganda and lies. What can the Democrats do to combat and counter this misinformation, lies that's being disseminated that people believe as if it were gospel? And I think it's really hurting the Democrats.
Absolutely. I periodically listen to it just so I have a full awareness. I grew up in rural Louisiana. There's no shortage of that and misinformation, but continuing to be the normal people party is what I tell folks. We don't all have to agree on the Democratic side, but we're the normal people party. We represent everyday folks and the values that are important to the vast majority of voters. We do have to improve our messaging and continue to reiterate that we're the job of fair wages. We're the job of access to health care. We're the party of a dignified retirement, of good livelihoods, safe schools. These things that are important to everyday lives, including the topic we just discussed on being able to afford a good lifestyle, which is in large part dependent on insurance and being able to recover mm-hmm. from natural disasters.
877-217-5757. And David notes what's happening in the media echo chamber. Those who are liberal often gravitate to one channel, those conservative to another, and Fox has the highest viewership. Their shows, the most popular ones, get around 3 million viewers a night. Well, in the last election, Biden got 81,284,000 and Trump got 74,224,000. So there are a lot of people voting for both sides who never watch one of those programs. James and Metairie, you'll be our final caller for Katie Bernhardt. Hi, James.
Well, good morning, Jim, and to your guest. Donald Trump, from what I see on these polls, there's about a 35-point gender gap between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Gee, I wonder why. What do you think, Ms. Bernhardt?
Trump is, if it were an election of just men, Trump would win in a landslide, and if it were just women, Harris would win in a landslide. What do you make of that? James asked a good question, Katie.
It's overwhelming to me as a woman, right? And I don't have any real hard stats on this, but I just think that women want to have someone that's going to be an advocate for them and treat them as a whole person, right? So just some basic fundamental rights here. And I think Hillary Clinton said it, that women's rights are human rights. And I think we all want to be treated as whole people. And Donald Trump does not seem to have that advocacy for women. Are really minorities or any other group of folks that simply want to be treated as Americans and equally. So I think that women wanting to support Kamala Harris, who's been an advocate for our issues, for fair pay, for access to health care, is a logical thing for all of us.
Thank you, Katie Bernhardt. We look forward to seeing you when you return. I think Katie's now spending a lot of time in Baton Rouge, so hopefully she'll make a return visit soon to talk Louisiana. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be here.
And we'll round the corner and head for home. If things go according to plan, we'll talk with one of the top tabloid journalists of all time, a guy who's written about his life and career, and it is quite a ride, with William Keck. So that's the plan, and we'll also remember the late, great Phil Donahue after this time out on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, your number 877-217-5757. We're with William Keck. His book is When You Step Upon a Star. And that's an appropriate title for a man who has a subtitle, Cringeworthy Confessions of a Tabloid Bad Boy. He followed around some of the most famous people in Hollywood primarily and made a lot of enemies as an intrepid reporter. And he did it with zeal, shall we say. Bruce Willis says, I'll find out where you live, Keck, and I'll burn your house down and you'll have no place to live. That's just one of many endorsements, if you will, for William Keck. Good morning, William.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for the introduction,
Well, what did you do to get on Bruce Willis's last nerve?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, this was pretty innocent compared to the other stories in the book. He was at a movie premiere, and he showed up with a very buxom, sexy young actress from Days of Our Lives. And at the after party, I was asking him about bringing this actress, and I mentioned how he had also married Demi Moore, who was on General Hospital, and he figured out that I was kind of going toward an angle of Bruce Willis finds his dates by watching daytime soap operas. And he just did not like that at all. He didn't like the idea of a diehard action hero sitting in front of his TV crying in front of the Young and the Restless. So yeah, he went pretty crazy on me and said, if I print that, if I go in that direction, he was going to come and burn my house to the ground. But listen, I apologize to a lot of the celebrities in the book. Unfortunately, Bruce is no longer verbal. So instead, Sybil Shepherd, his Moonlighting co-star, she wrote a page in my book defending her friend, saying that he was just having some fun with me.
Well, in his book, William Keck draws from three decades as an entertainment reporter. He has done stories for the National Enquirer, People, Entertainment Weekly, USA Today, the Los Angeles Times, and also has been ubiquitous in television for the Discovery Channel, NBC, Hallmark Channel. He's been around. He's covered a lot of people. And the nature of the beast sometimes when you cover anybody, whether it's a politician or a sports figure or a Hollywood icon, sometimes they don't like it. Here's one from Kelsey Grammer. I invite this man to fry in hell, but that's probably a done deal already. That's from Kelsey, a former guest on this show, by the way. Kelsey,
oh,
apparently.
Really?
Yeah, but Kelsey didn't take a shine to you, did he?
Well, you know, our paths crossed quite a bit back in the 90s when I was at the Enquirer. He was doing the first version of Frasier. You know, I went through the guy's garbage. His fiance at the time was one of my sources, as was his brother. So, yeah, we were not getting along so well. And he was writing his book at the time, and he chose to devote two pages in his book to me. And I chose to devote a whole chapter to him to kind of clear up some things. And listen, I reached out to Kelsey. I think he read the chapter. He declined to comment. But his ex-fiance at the time, she did comment in my book. She writes an essay about how he broke up with her, ended their engagement via their publicist. I don't think he appreciated that either. Yeah, it went on and on. Up until 3 years ago, I still did something with the Discovery Channel and Shark Week that rubbed him the wrong way. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to be chums going out to grab a beer at Cheers anytime soon.
The book is When You Step Upon a Star by William Keck. Now, a lot of times you're pursuing these people, and it's not just on foot. You got in some high-speed pursuits of some people, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I write about two in the book. One is Britney Spears. We spent about a couple hours in a high-speed chase with her, along with some other paparazzi trying to get photos of her with her then-husband, Kevin Federline, and that continued all the way down to Orange County. But in another instance, I was in a high-speed chase with Elizabeth Taylor. She was on her way to getting a surgical procedure at a hospital, and the Enquirer wanted to find out what hospital she was going to. So I did a stakeout of her house, and when her car came through the gates, I pursued it. But in that instance, my little angel on my shoulder got the best of me, and I did the right thing, and I pulled over to the side of the road and let my prey go. And thank goodness I did. A few years later, Diana died in that car crash, and I thought, well, what if I had done the same thing with Elizabeth Taylor? I clearly would never have been able to forgive myself.
How is it different working for, say, the National Enquirer covering a story, and that's what you're doing? It's an entertainment story, but still, the LA Times does the same thing. How is it different working for the Enquirer and covering the same kind of story you would be covering for the Los Angeles Times?
Oh, night and day. I mean, it was a shock to my system when I was working for the LA Times and USA Today, and all of a sudden, the celebrities' publicists were calling me to pitch stories. And inviting me into their clients' homes to do very intimate one-on-one profiles. You know, Johnny Depp of the Chateau Marmont and all the Desperate Housewives, I went to their homes for interviews and got into some trouble there, as I write about in the book. Whereas at the Enquirer, we were never invited to the party. So that's why I had to sneak into weddings and funerals and hospital rooms. And
was it fun?
Yes. You know, I got to admit it was. I mean, right now, it would be a horrible thing to have to do. But in my 20s, when I was new in LA and I really just wanted to meet these legends before they died, it was like being a kid in a candy store. And I got to play spy and I got to pretend I was different people and play actor. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't take that away for years. And to be able to write this book, having a few years space between that time and who I am today, it was really quite cathartic, I think. And I forgive that kid for doing the things that he did and for learning a lesson. At the end of every chapter, Jim, I share a lesson learned that helped me grow as a man and a journalist. And I think it's lessons that people can probably relate to and apply to their own lives.
Well, not everybody disliked William Keck, whose book is When You Step Upon a Star, The Fonz. Henry Winkler says, Keck loves Hollywood, knows Hollywood, writes about his idiosyncratic journey through the dark and light of Hollywood. Henry likes you.
Yes. Yes. So I spent 7 years at Home and Family. It was a daytime talk show on the Hallmark Channel, and I got to welcome on all these people who I'd worshipped when I was a kid and who I'd had problems with in the Inquirer, and they got to know me in a different light. Henry was one of them. I think the next quote in that, I think there's about three or four pages of endorsements from celebrity friends. Linda Evans from Dynasty, she wrote a lovely little blurb in support of the book. So yeah, it's nice that I've countered some of those horrible, threatening quotes from people like Kelsey and Bruce Willis with some people who really know who I am, the real William Keck today, who's a changed man.
Well, how did you land on the Scientologist suppressives list? How did that happen?
You know, I didn't even know myself for a while. I was all set to interview Kirstie Alley in her home for USA Today. And the day before I was supposed to go to her home, her manager called me and said, Will, I'm sorry, you can't do the interview. Kirstie was a Scientologist, and I was told that I had done something to alienate the church. So I pleaded my case that I've never met Kirstie. I can't imagine what this is. And it goes right back to Kelsey Grammer. Again, Kelsey Grammer. I had been on an Emmy's red carpet, and I had asked Kelsey why Kirstie was the only Cheers actor who had not guest starred on Frasier. Everyone else, Shelley Long and Ted Danson, they'd all been on, yep, on Frasier except for Kirstie. And he said, well, you know, we've asked Kirstie a few times, but she says that because my character, Dr. Frasier Crane, is a psychologist, she won't do the show because Scientologists disagree with psychology. So I thought this is a pretty cool item for Entertainment Weekly. I had to get a quote from Kirstie, and Kirstie did quote and give me a quote. She said, the only way I would ever do Frasier is if I get to do Frasier. I thought it was a funny quote, a little racy, but we ran it just as she wanted us to run it. And I think she was fine with it, but the church, they felt I was making fun of them. And yes, that landed me on their suppressive do not speak to list.
The book is
luckily Kirstie and I became friends, and hopefully I'm off the list.
When You Step Upon a Star, Cringeworthy Confessions of a Tabloid Bad Boy. It's quite a ride. From William Keck. William, thank you, and congrats on your fine work and your continuing diligence for the pursuit of the truth.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that, Jim. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you, friend. Phil Donahue, who in the 1960s reinvented the television talk show with a flourish, inviting audiences to question his guests on topics as high-minded as human rights and international relations, and as unblushingly lowbrow as male strippers and safe-sex orgies, died on Sunday at his home in the Upper East Side of Manhattan. He was 88. Phil Donahue's show made its debut 1967 on a television station in Dayton, Ohio, propelling him on a 29-year syndicated run, much of it as the unchallenged king of daytime talk television. That's from the New York Times that has Phil on the front page today, 1935 to 2024, for Phil Donahue. Now, he was a guy who came back in 2003 and was fired after 6 months at MSNBC. And here's Phil describing what happened at what now is the network of choice for liberals.
The biggest lesson, I think, is the how corporate media shapes our opinions and our coverage. This was the decision to release me, came from far above. This was not an assistant program director who decided to separate me from MSNBC. They were terrified of the anti-war voice, and that is not an overstatement. Anti-war voices were not popular. And if you're General Electric, you certainly don't want an anti-war voice on a cable channel that you own. Donald Rumsfeld's your biggest customer. So, by the way, I had to have two conservatives on for every liberal.
That was Phil Donahue describing his time at MSNBC 20 years ago. Back tomorrow, same time, same place. And then, until then, stay safe and stay tuned.